Hey guys, just a real brief aside. There's was a little bit of an audio glitch somewhere at the beginning of the episode, so we just gave you a nice little musical interlude while we skip past that. But if you wonder why there's random music playing, that's you're not going crazy. It's just because we had a technical issue. At any rate, thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Welcome to Sequelize It, where we chronicle the triumphs and dissect the disasters of Hollywood, one movie franchise at a time. This week we bow down to the king. It's Lord of the Rings, the Return of the King. Through the halls and the corridors, stinking in blood, I tasted his grin, and it tasted good, whatever the fuck that means. I'm KC, and joining me on the podcast is...
Fox from Backlash, and it is so nice to be here with you here at the end of all things.
And I'm No Chris Alive, Sequelize It's Mastodon of the Monotone, and I'm ready for Load Erotic, and that is the most abbreviated I'll be this episode.
And tonight we round out our look at the Lord of the Rings movies with a film that was certainly a triumph. What was a bit like Shawn Michaels versus Bret Hart at WrestleMania 12, it probably isn't as good to me as it is to everybody else. But before that, the gratuitous plugs. If you want to help the podcast grow, you can do us a few favors. One, you can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcasting app of choice. Two, you can be sure to subscribe so you can be the first to hear new episodes. 3, you can follow us on Twitter at SequelizeIt. 4, send us an email and let us know what movie franchises you'd like to see us take on at SequelizeIt@gmail.com. And 5, if you like what we're doing, just tell a friend to give us a listen and keep on circulating the podcast. Backlash, Chris, what were your initial thoughts on Lord of the Rings? This is the movie that never ends. Yes, it goes on and on, my friends. Some people started complaining about the endings, not knowing what it was, and they'll continue complaining forever just because this is the movie that never ends.
This was the only one I had seen in theaters, and I remember at least enjoying myself in the theaters, but I guess it says something that this was the winter of 2003, so that would mean it's been 17 plus years since I've seen it. And that, I always knew that it was good. Perhaps not as viscerally entertaining as Two Towers, but like I just never deigned to watch it again because I knew how goddamn long it was.
A backlash?
This is a movie that is 4 hours long that I watched. And goddamn, it sure felt like a movie that I watched that was 4 hours long. That's not necessarily a bad thing. I have watched many, many terrible movies that have been much shorter but longer. But this is a movie that felt 4 hours long.
I've seen worse.
Thank you.
then that's not even getting to the at the end. But even before that, I was like, there are a few scenes that are going on just a little bit.
And yeah, too long. And I think that this still does interesting things with its characters. For instance, like Denethor is one of them, but they also belabor things. They belabor points that don't necessarily need to be belabored.
Yeah, this is the one movie, and we'll get to it a little bit in trivia, but this is the one movie where it seems like they were trying to fit the most stuff from the books just in the movie without an eye towards what was actually important to the plot, you know?
I don't want to say scenes drag on. There's just too many scenes.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
I think that's been a problem overall. It's like you have so many scenes and you're cutting back and forth so much, it can get disorientating from time to time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's not that what's happening on screen isn't engaging. It's just that there's too much of it. And sometimes too much of a good thing can be a bad thing. And I don't think this is a bad movie at all. I'll say that up front. I don't think this is a bad movie. I think this is a pretty great movie. But it just... It needs some pruning. It needs, like... I think you could take out, like... Not including the endings. I think you could remove, like, a half hour from this movie. It would be excellent. One of the best movies ever. But, I mean... It already is one of the best movies ever, but one of the best movies ever in my personal opinion.
It won the Oscar for Best Picture, which is clearly the measuring stick for being one of the best movies ever.
Yeah, like, I mean...
It sort of is in sort of league with Moonlight and Crash.
Crash, Cody Rhodes' favorite movie.
Yeah.
and with that, you know, us burying Cody again for no reason and yet every reason, once again, we head to trivia, and once again, we do Trivia Abridged. And this is...
Stop, don't stop, we're in luck now. Don't stop, there's so much to be found. We can't find paradise. All we have to do is go, go, free your soul. Dragon Soul.
Okay, Return of the King. It's fucking complicated. Lots of shit that happened in the Two Towers book had to be moved to this fucking movie. Want to know what changed? Too fucking bad. You're going to have to learn about it, because I had to. Giant spider fight, supposed to happen in Two Towers. Pippin fucking up the Palantir or whatever, also in Two Towers. Mad about it, Ringshead, too fucking bad. Director Peter Jackson says it matches the timeline of the appendices of the Lord of the Rings and probably the Silmarillion 2. Fuck, I'm never reading those books. The Shire never gets scoured, and there's like 3 whole chapters of the Return of the King novel that don't get a fucking look in. Loads of shit happens in the extended edition that doesn't happen in the theatrical cut, because this movie is already 3 hours long, and we have to find a way to justify paying Liv Tyler to stand around doing nothing for 3 fucking movies. Denethor wasn't as much of a dick in the book. Why is Gandalf commanding the troops during the Battle of Minas Tirith? Because they removed the commanding officers of Gondor in the movie. Arwen is still in this fucking movie. Why? Frodo and Sam's second act breakup never happens in the fucking book. There are even more fucking endings in the goddamn book than there are in this actual movie. Return of the King had 1,489 visual effects. Not a one justifies Arwen's existence in the movie. Imagine being told that you have 2 days to redo a shot that it took 6 months to do, and you'll get a sense of how much crunch went into the visual effects. We haven't talked nearly enough about Howard Shore's magnificent score in these movies. He watched an assembly cut of the movie and had to write 7 minutes of music a day to keep up with the production. Don't think that's a lot? Let's see you try. Billy Boyd, Viggo Mortensen, and Liv Tyler all contribute to the movie soundtrack, because what we needed was Arwen singing song to a much more interesting character in Eowyn. Most of the movie's pickup shots and reshoots were done in the parking lot outside the studio in Wellington. Oh, look, it's time to edit the movie. Oh, no, we have a bunch of shit we couldn't put in the second movie. Well, I guess we'll put in Smeagol's origin story and the reforging of Aragorn's sword in here. They spent 3 fucking weeks working on the last 45 minutes of the movie. Methinks they did overthink it too much. Upon release, the movie was nominated for 11 Academy Awards. It won all 11 it was nominated for, including Best Picture and Best Director. It also won 9 Saturn Awards, 5 BAFTAs, 4 Golden Globes, 2 MTV Movie Awards, 2 Grammys, and a Partridge in a Pear Tree. Lord of the Rings, Return of the King made $1.146 billion at the box office through its initial release and various re-releases. It was the highest grossing movie ever for New Line Cinema and held the record for the highest grossing movie by Time Warner, at least until it was beaten by an entry in the Movie Not to Be Named series. The Lord of the Rings trilogy is the highest grossing film trilogy of all time, beating out literally all 3 trilogies in the Skywalker saga. It has a 93% rating on Rotten Tomatoes and an 87% audience score. And there we go, trivia bridged.
That was a pretty even keel. I mean, we could just think of the Oscar wins as sort of the sort of deferred Oscars for the Two Towers and feel better maybe.
Yeah, it's not that I don't think this movie earns its Oscars. It's just, yeah.
I mean, I like this movie and it had great moments, but there are some things that again, like, seemed kind of baffling. Some things that seemed kind of belabored, and
it's worse for us because we watched the extended edition.
Yeah, did we ever seriously break down differences in beyond just like little snatches, like say the flashback with Denethor, which should have been in the original cut but was for some reason in the extended edition of the Two Towers?
I don't know. I mean, I think that's we did in Fellowship a little bit. I can see if I can pull up something that has the differences
by going through like plot summaries and stuff like that, like on IMDb. It seems like the stuff that is added isn't really integral to the plot, or at least some of it isn't. So there aren't like huge large scale differences between the movies. It's just like it's relatively little stuff. So to talk at length about the differences, I feel like would be pointless, because one, we're not huge Lord of the Rings fans, so we can't talk about the differences between the book and compare that to the extended editions. And two, because ultimately the stuff I think that is added isn't plot breaking. So, I mean, absolutely, I think the thing with Denethor and Faramir should have been in the Two Towers. There was no excuse to take that out. But then again, in this movie, they do a good job of explaining their relationship, so...
Yeah.
Okay, I have a few things that are in the extended cut, but not the theatrical. There's a quick scene with Éomer reacting to his dad's death, which is probably the best scene that Carl Urban has in any of these movies he's in.
Yeah.
There's, of course, Saruman's death scene that was cut from the original cut.
Really?
Yes, that was not in the theatrical cut.
Yeah.
There's the Mouth of Sauron scene, which has Aragorn decapitating him, which I guess Jackson felt was out of character for him. That's what that was.
That's cut. What that was.
There's the... there's a scene with Gandalf fighting the Witch King that was cut. There's more between the Eowyn and Faramir that shows that they kind of have a relationship after everything happens.
Oh yeah, that I do recall, and that's sort of like That seemed like almost like they're throwing her character a bone. That
yeah, it's like yeah, you didn't get the king. Yeah, you didn't get the king, but here's the disappointing son.
Right.
Was that mostly? That's most of it.
There's probably more I'm missing, but
yeah. So like I said, none of the stuff that's you know, quote unquote, missing in the theatrical cut is, you know, that integral to things. So. That's kind of why we didn't go.
Maybe Saruman.
Well, yeah. Well, we'll get to that. yeah. So, with the trivia out of the way, we can now proceed to our feature presentation. There once was a fella named Deagle, who went fishing with a hobbit named Schmeagol. He caught a great fish, which was his only great wish, but found also a ring of great evil. Now Schmeagol was a greedy lad, who now wanted what poor Deagle had. So Schmeagol did kill in accordance with the ring's will, and Smeagol's tale was doomed to end quite sad. Suffice it to say, no one in Smeagol's village was down with having a murderer in their midst, so Schmeagol grows old, forgets his name, and gets a split personality called Gollum. Back in the present, Frodo is wide-ass awake, much to the chagrin of Sam. They are finally almost to Mordor, and Smeagol presses them to keep moving on, so he can get with the murdering of the hobbits to take the ring for himself. Meanwhile, the Fellowship, along with Éomer and King Théoden, make their way over to Isengard and find Merry and Pippin smoking them dank nugs. They like weed, and that ain't no L-I-E. I don't smoke.
Spell lugubrious.
Merry and Pippin lead the gang victorious over to Treebeard, who assures Gandalf that Sir not appearing in the theatrical cut is locked up in his tower under Treebeard's guard. Gimli is like, yo, maybe we should just finally kill that guy. But for reasons unknown to anyone who hasn't watched the extended editions, Gandalf is like, nah, he has no power, he should be fine, just like that fellow Wormtongue that we let go free. I'm sure he's not killing Saruman in a different cut of the movie right now. No, sir, not at all. Pippin, being a big fucking idiot, spies with his hobbit eyes the Palantir and goes to grab it, but Gandalf snatches it away from him and hides it in a bag. The gang ride back to Helm's Deep, where they are partying hard. Eowyn is giving Aragorn the bedroom eyes, but J.R.R. Tolkien and Peter Jackson both haven't realized that she is a complex, three-dimensional character with wants, needs, and goals, and therefore a much better match for Aragorn than whatever the fuck Arwen is. Meanwhile, Gandalf is being a little bit of a party pooper over the whereabouts of Frodo, but Aragorn insists that Frodo is still alive. Speaking of Frodo, he's fast asleep, and just as Sam finally nods off, Smeagol awakens and has a chat with Gollum. Basically, Smeagol isn't sure if he wants to kill the hobbits, but after a quick pep talk, Smeagol is back down with the plan. Unfortunately for him, Sam hears this convo and proceeds to open up a can of grade A hobbit whoop-ass. Frodo, poor sweet stupid Frodo, awakens and insists that they need Smeagol as a guide, as Smeagol plays dumb and Sam thinks of inventive new ways to kill the little bastard. Back at Helm's Deep, Pippin is a fucking dumbass and looks at the thing he was expressly told not to look at. He has a vision of Minas Tirith getting its shit kicked in, so Gandalf rides out to warn the Gondorian city that Sauron has its giant eye locked in on them, with Pippin in tow to make sure he doesn't do something stupid again. Back in Rivendell, some uninteresting, pace-shattering shit with Arwen happens again. The only important part is the reforging of Narsil, so Aragorn can take his rightful place as the heir of Gondor. Gandalf and Pippin arrive at Minas Tirith to meet with the steward of Gondor, Denethor. Gandalf looks at Pippin and implores him to not embarrass himself by mentioning that whole Boromir died when he tried to take the ring from Frodo thing. Unfortunately for Gandalf, Denethor already knows about Boromir dying and is basically being a good self-destructive douche about it. Also, Pippin swears an oath of loyalty to the guy who clearly isn't in his right mind. Back with Frodo, Sam, and Smeagol, they reach Minas Morgul and the Winding Stair, but Frodo, poor, sweet, stupid Frodo, fucks around and nearly gets caught by the Witch King just as the angry hordes of orcs make their way towards Minas Tirith. In the meanwhile, Gandalf has Pippin do the one thing he's good at, fucking shit up and making people angry. Pippin lights the beacon of Gondor, signaling that the time has come for the epic confrontation at long last, just as the orcs cross the river into Osgiliath. And that is Act 1.
That was a good-ass scene, that torch lighting.
Yeah, like, it was.
Very much on a macro level, like on a huge world level. I mean, I'm sure there are a bunch of municipalities and villages and counties and whatever that you wouldn't have heard about, but just the idea that like this one like little action affects the entire world, which itself is kind of the overarching point of this quest is really, really well put.
Yeah. So I have a question. Maybe it's too early for this question, maybe it's not. But have these movies given us any reason at all to care about Arwen?
No.
Like, I feel like I'm being a bully about the character, but also I feel like I'm right, so I don't care. Like, it's
tacked on when one considers the sort of the narrative structure of a film. And the sort of traditional means of characterization, which this is the type of movie that's striving for that kind of thing. But it comes off as something that's done in earnest, but ultimately would only affect like sort of toy making and like be for the sake of merchandising. Like, it wasn't Peter Jackson's intention, but that's ultimately what it'll amount to.
Yeah, because I was talking to my wife, and every time Arwen came on screen, I would roll my eyes, and she'd be like, "What's your problem?" And I'm like, "This character has no point." And she's like, "Well, yeah, but like, she was far more interested in the romance between Aragorn and Arwen than I was, because I just felt like Arwen doesn't earn a relationship with Aragorn, which is a weird... Is that weird to feel like
she doesn't... I don't know who this character is, and the movie isn't making me interested in her.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that's where it is.
It screws with the pacing. I feel like I wonder if they would almost need to make like a side story movie for this to really matter. Or it would be something that would be better served in a TV series. I understand that I believe the Amazon series is like far flung in the past. Like, I'm not sure if it has to do with Isildur, but like, I think it's pre-Fellowship, pre-Ring Destruction.
Yeah, I think it's before all that stuff. Yeah. But yeah, I can't. Every time she shows up on screen, I'm just immediately thrown out of the movie because I know what's good. They're just going to spend like 10 minutes talking about fucking nothing. Nothing that impacts our characters. Nothing that really impacts Arwen. Nothing that impacts the world. I just don't understand. So, how about you guys tell me how Saruman died? Because I didn't get to see that in my cut of the movie.
Oh, it's quite hilarious, actually. Because they're just yelling at him. Because he's trying to say, like, oh, I still have power. They're like, no, you don't. And basically, they're like, hey, you know stuff. Why don't you tell us? And he's like, I don't want to. And eventually it just comes to that that Wormtongue has had enough of the shit, stabs him in the back, and Saruman falls off the tower and lands on a giant wheel. And it's quite hilarious.
It goes from very solemn, like the stabbing of him in the back by Wormtongue is very solemn. And by the way, Wormtongue pretty much disappears from the rest of the movie.
No, he gets shot. You see him get shot with an arrow.
Oh, yeah, he does. Right. Yeah. But it goes from solemn to very hilarious to watch him just like sort of have like a like Homer Simpson like falling and breaking his back on a rock. Not like Springfield Gorge, but that like added thing was perhaps like
unnecessary.
Yeah, not the best on paper.
I mean, he was already falling to his death.
But I mean, we were sort of saving this up just to at least like compliment how much of a treasure Christopher Lee is, because obviously if you watch the video of him explaining how how he performed that scene, and like I think like either Peter Jackson was asking him like how he would grunt like when being stabbed in the back, and he's like, well, no, you wouldn't grunt. It would feel as if the breath is sort of like leaving you, because in the war I got stabbed in the back.
Oh boy!
So I've gone through this shit, and that's his sort of like that's his kind of his mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah, it's so weird that like that's just like not in the movie. It was apparently I guess in the theatrical cut they felt like they had spent so long focusing on Saruman, and now Sauron was like the real big bad that they had to focus on. So they it's a bit Rise of Skywalker, like we don't want these bad guys to be the bad guys anymore, so we have to get rid of these bad guys and replace them with more generic bad guys, because these bad guys are actually the important ones.
To be fair, at the very least, like the bad guys that they replace him with were pretty well established in the first part of that trilogy.
That's true.
Rise of Skywalker was just definitely like in your brain at that point, wasn't it?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, this is not Rise of the Skywalker. Like the shit that happens in this movie means something. Characters change. They make reference to shit that happened in the other movies. Like, it is. I feel like it's gonna sound like we're being negative on this movie, but I want to stress that this is a good movie, and I enjoyed myself watching it. It just has issues that are more plainly obvious, I think, than more plainly obvious than I think the Fellowship and Two Towers had, if that makes sense.
All right. But yeah, we could at least like get back to the idea of at least they do shoot Grima. I'm just remembering after being told. So what do we think of the introduction with the origin of Gollum? Is it something that necessarily needs to be shown to us?
I mean, I don't think it needs to be shown to us, but I don't dislike that it's here. It's. I think it was a solid open to the movie, because Smeagol / Gollum becomes so important, giving him a little bit of background and showing just how much the ring can pervert the will of, you know, two people who are honestly, we don't learn much about Deagle and Smeagol as friends, but it seems like they were friends.
Yeah, they're the definition of hapless. Like just in an instant their lives completely changed.
Yeah. And so that it's less about Smeagol and more about the ring and just how fucking bad the ring actually truly is. So does it need to be here? No, not necessarily. It probably doesn't need to be here because it was meant to be in Two Towers anyways, but whatever. I found it interesting to have just a little bit more understanding of kind of the way Smeagol works and the way that Gollum manipulates him. Backlash.
I'm not on my A game today. Damn.
It's because it's Monday. It's like, a weird day.
I know. There's just like a lot, and there's a lot in this movie. I just
easy that it's just like a porridge of shit that happened on screen, so it's hard to formulate. I guess,
but that feels unfair because like I was invested in what was happening at the time, but I feel like a lot of it just hasn't stuck with me. At least the early parts. Like when it gets to the exciting stuff, I'm more into it.
I can definitely see that, because I felt like the beginning of this first act, it does feel kind of long. It doesn't help that we get, like, again, like a 7-minute scene of the shit with Arwen thrown in there, and the kind of back and forth between Sam and Schmeagol. It feels kind of samey, almost. Kind of like, it's kind of like when you see how many matches can you watch where, you know, the baby face, you know, opens up fast and has the heels on their toes, and then the heel runs outside, and then the baby face does a dive over the top rope. That's how basically every match in WWE starts. And after a while, it's just like, yeah, this is good, but, and that's impressive, but, you know, can we not move on to the part of the match that matters? I feel like maybe that's a little bit of what's happening with the first act. It's engaging, it's acted well, it's directed well, the score is amazing, the cinematography is great. Nothing in the movie is bad, but it's a little bit like, all right now, can we be getting to the part where the king returns? Like, I think it's a little bit of that. Yeah, the questions I have are for later, so, do we just want to move on to Act 2, then?
I guess we can.
Because I feel like we can talk more about some other characters that were introduced in Act 1. We can talk more about them in Act 2.
I know, I'll probably have a lot to say about Denethor in Act 2.
All right,
here we go. I actually did manage to write the thing, so. The Morgul army invades Osgiliath, taking the city very easily. The Gondorian troops are forced to retreat to Minas Tirith, being saved by Gandalf in the process. Back there, Faramir then explains to Gandalf that the hobbits are basically fucked. Elsewhere, Gollum is managing to perfectly manipulate Frodo because the ring has turned him into an idiot. Back at Minas Tirith, Denethor admonishes his disappointment of a son and laments that Boromir was the one who died, thus sending Faramir off to retake Osgiliath. The fact that this is an impossible task does not seem to concern him. More hobbit stuff as Gollum throws away the last of their food, placing the blame on Sam. This, along with Sam asking to hold the ring for a while, convinces Frodo to send him away. Once again back in Minas Tirith, Faramir embarks on a suicide mission as Denethor orders Pippin to sing to him a tune while bloody chunks of meat run down his face. Very subtle. We return to the Rohan camp as night falls, and a hooded figure approaches Aragorn, revealing himself to be Elrond. He informs him that Arwen is dying due to plot. Why? Don't question it. He grants him the reforged sword and says with it, the army of the dead will follow him. Cool, I didn't follow any of that. The Morgul's begin their assault by chucking the heads of dead soldiers over the wall. Denethor cannot be bothered as he is grieving over the body of the son he doesn't love. Pippin tries to convince him that Faramir isn't dead, but Denethor isn't listening, ordering his men to surrender until Gandalf decides he's had enough of his shit and knocks him the fuck out, taking charge of the troops himself. Back to the hobbits. Gollum has finally led Frodo into the planned trap as Sam finds the discarded bread at the bottom of the mountain, realizing he didn't actually eat it. Is the stupid contagious? The trap itself? A giant fuck-off spider that Frodo just barely escapes. Gollum tries in vain to steal the ring, but gets thrown off the cliff for his trouble. But because Frodo is a dumbass, he gets paralyzed by the spider. Before it can enjoy its Hobbit Crunchwrap Supreme, Sam comes to the rescue, driving the nightmare fuel away. However, it seems too late to save Frodo as the orcs sit upon them, taking Frodo's paralyzed body away. Back in Minas Tirith, the battle is not going so well, but Denethor can't be bothered as he wants to burn his not-quite-dead son. Pippin and Gandalf have to race to stop him, and a fight breaks out with Denethor, ending up on the pyre instead, thus throwing himself off the long precipice at the top of Minas Tirith, giving him probably one of the best ways to die put to cinema.
So, yeah, that was very terse.
Yeah, that was a good way to condense that act, because a lot of shit happens.
Yeah, shit, let me direct this movie. I'll have it under 90 minutes.
Oh, I don't boy. Think I could. I don't think I could do a 90-minute cut of this. I think I could get it to like 2 hours, 2 hours 15, tops.
You know what? The first thing I would do to this movie is I would recast Denethor. John Noble did his damnedest. I think he like acted his ass off. But just looking at him with the wrinkles and the long hair, and I'm like, recast Michael Ironside as him.
You know what I couldn't get past with that actor? He was in L.A. Noire, and once I realized that, I couldn't unsee it.
Yeah, I'm just reading that right now, but yeah. Imagine General Katana as Denethor. Just like, instead of being like more hammy, he's still hammy, but he's just hammy in the most depressive way possible.
I mean, I think I couldn't figure out where I knew that actor from. So it just, I won't say it took me out of the movie, but I definitely kept being like, where the fuck do I know this? I know he's in this movie. What was he in? What was he in that I know him from? And it's probably one of those things where he's been in everything. So
he's also a Scarecrow in Arkham Knight.
Wait, he's Scarecrow in Art? He's the voice actor for Scarecrow?
Mm-hmm.
I can't picture that working. I haven't played that game.
It's fine if you like the Batmobile, it's great. If you don't like the Batmobile,
so we'll... if you like Defenestration, then you'll love Return of the King. And if you love Defenestration, then you'll love Return of the King Extended Cut.
But yeah, Denethor, which I feel like you can write a book just about him.
Yeah, like I think he's a really neat character that's perhaps like sort of like derails the movie whenever he's around. Like I understand the point of the character is that he is the sort of the opposite of the heroes. He is a millstone of negative emotion, pessimism, and a feeling of all is lost from admittedly like very complex origins of like his obsession with the ring, his narrow-minded plan that like it will turn the tides in their favor, his sort of his love for his son and bitterness towards his other son for not measuring up, all led to a cocktail of just this character being as depressive as hell, drowning his sorrows, gorging his sorrows. And
yet that performance just kind of undercuts it a lot of the time, because like when the enemy's at the door and he's screaming, "Abandon your post!" I can't help but laugh. And then he gets conked on the head. I'm like, no, this is funny. This is supposed to be sad.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a sad tale of, you know, someone who at one point was probably a decent man, not a good man, but a decent man who is clinging both to power, since he's not really, he's basically sitting around waiting for the king to come and depose him, even though he's supposed to be the ruler, which sucks. I think that would suck for anybody. And he has, again, that idea that, like, if he just possesses the ring, everything would be fine. What is it with people in this world thinking that if they just had the ring, everything would be fine? Is it a case of...
Here's a question. What does the ring do besides turn you invisible?
And make you surveilled by Sauron as a result.
I think the only thing what entices people about it is the power. I don't think they know what the ring does. They are just entranced by the power that kind of radiates from it. And they,
I guess.
I mean, in this world, Sauron was basically able to nearly take the whole damn planet over with the ring. So obviously, if we have the ring, then, well, clearly they could beat Sauron. And not only that, but then maybe they can become the rulers because they are the ones who can fix everything.
And I think at the end of the day, the only one who has had firsthand experience with the ring and its effects are Gollum and to a just as pointed but lesser effect Bilbo. To everyone else, it's legend. It's sort of millennia, like multiple millennia year old legend that they know granted whoever had it power and like great influence on essentially the entire Middle Earth around them. The only people who do have an indication of its danger are people like Elrond, who are 3,000 years old and were around.
Yeah, having the ring is like wanting to be the president of the United States. The only person who should be the president of the United States is a person who doesn't want to be the president of the United States. Because with that is a whole hell of a lot of power. And anyone who craves that power, even the best person with the best intentions who craves that power, has the ability to use it in a way that is less than favorable to the people that they are affecting, essentially.
What you're describing is a plot line from one of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy books.
Which one? I should read it.
The third one, I believe.
Life, the universe, everything.
Yes, that's the one where they meet the ruler of the universe, who is a guy who really just doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Or it might be the second. Yeah, I think that's the second book. The restaurant at the end of the galaxy, at the end of the universe. I mean.
Well, I guess I know what I'm gonna be what I'm gonna be reading next.
So anyhow,
shit! I think I forgot to add something.
What happened?
Did I leave out the City of the Dead?
Oh, the City of the... Well, like, actually, I have a comment on that with my snarky notes.
No, because I was reading a recap of the plot. Here's the thing. I'm reading a recap of the plot to write my synopsis, and I don't see it talked about here. Is that a fucking extended only?
That is in Return of the
Okay, then the synopsis I'm reading just forgot to leave it out. But I have notes that say skulls. Why are there so many goddamn skulls?
Minas Morgul.
No, it wasn't Minas Morgul. It was that weird valley place in Aragorn.
Right.
It's a thing where Aragorn has to basically leave to go do this because getting the army of the dead is basically the only way they have a shot at taking back Minas Tirith, basically.
Yeah, and I mean, let us not get into like the sort of logistics and physics of incorporeal forms shifting the tide and affecting corporeal forms and how much of a weirdness that is.
Yeah, this movie
and how it's kind of like a plot coupon.
Yeah, this movie took a weird turn to Zombiesville, like
to Pirate Ghost Land.
Yeah, like when my wife, who usually just watches movies and enjoys them, makes a hey, they're at World's End. Are they gonna rock the boat back and forth so they can get back to the actual real world now? When she's cracking that kind of joke, then you're losing someone who typically doesn't get lost and is largely enraptured by films like this.
Yeah.
So, do you want to talk some more about Arwen?
Oh, fuck me, sure.
Why is she dying?
She.
This is apparently tied to the ring. Is that?
Yeah.
Because we were talking about this yesterday, and like, just.
Yeah, Elrond says her fate is tied to the fate of the ring. Because.
That's all? So they don't just like. I mean, I don't need to speak a paragraph about it, but like, when I was watching this, like, I did not digest that.
It is literally just something that is said to just justify why. To give Aragorn another reason to need to do something other than the fact that Aragorn is heroic and wants to help people and seems to be coming to terms with the fact that he is the rightful ruler of Gondor and ruler of men. And he just in case Aragorn being a great man wasn't enough. By the way, your girlfriend's going to die if you don't, if everything goes wrong.
It's like I'm saying they have to force Arwen in some way because I'm guessing she's kind of a non-presence in the books. Just kind of there in the background, like someone Aragorn's always thinking about, but isn't in much of the story itself. So they just kind of have to keep pushing her into the story.
I mean, one of the questions I have is, do you think these movies could have been written without without Arwen in them at all?
Yes.
Yes. You could have had, like, some reminiscences of his past life and like, how it didn't work out and how he previously loved, like, and, like, that's why he's able to speak Elvish and get around, like, Rivendell and sort of commune with Elrond and, like, he trusts
him. Well, they do have the bit in Two Towers where it explains he's, like, he has, like, a very long lifeline and he's actually in his 80s in the right. Movies.
But that would be enough to sort of explain like how he's able to sort of accord and parlay with like this other sort of race of people who are generally like not as like open and more or less kept to themselves and like with their own rituals and certainly halflings don't like know much of their traditions. Or I don't know, maybe have Gandalf speak with them.
I mean, the only thing I'm can think of that would be changed is her riding with Frodo, which in Fellowship, which, you know, doesn't the plot is in no way really affected by that. It could have
coupon.
Yeah, it could have just as easily been Aragorn.
I feel like at this time we have a ton of nerds screaming at us like that would ruin the story.
But how? I feel like the only reason why she's in this movie is just because she's in the book. And that is the only character, really, that I feel that way with. Because I feel like, you know, if you're going to get rid of Tom Bombadil because he doesn't have anything to do with the story and it's just a huge diversion, why not get rid of this fucking plot, which doesn't have anything to do with the story and it's just a huge diversion? And again, we say this as people who have not read the book. And maybe in the book, she's a far more important character. But the gist I get is that, especially when you consider that in Two Towers, they filmed Arwen fighting in the Battle of Helm's Deep. And they took that scene out of the movie, out of both cuts of the movie, because it was going to upset fans because she wasn't there. So it seems a bit weird to be like, oh, well, fans would be upset if Arwen was in the movie somewhere. Like, well, if they're upset that you're just going to shoehorn her into a pivotal battle just so she can be there.
I think we could move on.
Yeah.
I think Arwen, what I do want to talk about is that like the Battle of Minas Tirith is exciting on its own. Aside from the, like, but I feel like it's following pretty big. It has big shoes to fill with the battle at Helm's Deep, and I feel like it's only a preamble for sort of the stuff that the action that goes on just outside of it, and also the stuff in front of the Black Gate.
Yeah, it's very much it's very much the undercard match to the eventual main event.
It's very much the 8-man tag match.
Yeah, you know, we're gonna get the crowd hype and maybe put over some heels, get them a little bit over. But
from a film standpoint, it's the second act, sort of like people in sort of ruins or characters in peril.
Characters at their lowest point, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fine. I didn't find the battle of, because it's not much of a battle. It's mostly just people dying and Gandalf screaming a lot. Like, the people of Gondor just seem completely and utterly out of their depth. And I wonder if that was on purpose because they wanted to show just how ineffectual Denethor was as a leader at preparing his troops. Because Denethor very much has he wants to die. He has no hope whatsoever. Like, his son is dead. He does not give a shit. He doesn't give a shit about his son, or he may give a shit about his living son, but not enough of a shit to, like, not want him to die. Like, I very much feel like Denethor is just, like, he feels the walls caving in, and he's just like, fuck it, I'm just gonna go now. Like, this is it. Like, they're all hope is fucking gone. This place is gonna get destroyed. Sauron's gonna take over. Who gives a shit? Like, my son is dead. I feel like that's part of the reason why the battle felt so unorganized, especially compared to the Battle of Helm's Deep, where Aragorn and Theoden are kind of almost master tacticians.
Master tacticians in the moment.
Yeah. Very much able to think on their feet.
And just from a sort of narrative standpoint, like, it almost seems like a rehash, because what you have the Battle of Helm's Deep is these odds are like hundreds of people versus at least 10,000, like, building everything up, like, sort of, and seeing the characters react in like very snap judgments and Hail Marys as, like, things develop. Whereas in this case, it's just, oh, the orcs just have more reserves.
Right.
And I get that this is sort of Sauron's army as far as Sauron's, but it's just like, okay, now that those resources have depleted, now we need to send these ones.
Right. And that was actually a problem that Peter Jackson had, where he felt like the orcs were just not as intimidating as the Uruk-hai, and I would say that's probably correct. And so he tried to have a few more orcs that were, like, stood out and more obviously in charge, but I'm honestly watching my cut of the movie, I didn't really notice if any of the Bebop and Rocksteady looking motherfuckers were better than any of the other ones. And so it was hard to, like, stay engaged with the battle, just because it felt like the people, it felt like they were failing for too long. And you can only watch people fail for so long before you're like, okay, well, at this point, you kind of deserve to fail because you're just almost too disorganized. What else happens in this act? We didn't talk about how... One thing we didn't talk about, because we forgot to talk about her too, is the character of Eowyn. How she, in the first act, she decides that she's going to ride with the, basically with the gathering army. Basically, she pretends as if it's morale, but even Aragorn kind of gets the sense that she's going to fight in the actual battle. And that is the place where Aragorn actually is like, sorry, I'm kind of seeing someone else at the moment. Which I feel like she takes well, but I really like the character of Eowyn, and her kind of arc throughout Two Towers and in this movie is I think.
Perhaps not as good build up, but definitely some good payoff.
Yeah.
With Eowyn.
Yeah.
And then let's see. No, I think I'm gonna save that question for third act. The only other question I had was, how did the battles in Return of the King compare to the Battle of Helm's Deep? But we kind of went into that a little bit. We'll go into that, I guess, more when we get to the third act. So, do we want to go just move on to Act 3, or is there anything else that we think we're missing from Act 2?
No, I can't think of anything.
Okay. So I guess it's time to do Act 3, huh?
Yep.
All right. this may be a while, but... We see the shaky cam battles, triumphant choruses of vocals ring out. Even Marius stabbing orcs. Here come the elephants and the Hierodrome trampling soldiers. The line of Rohan is ready to defend. They charge. The elephants just fucking sweeping them away with their huge tusks. Damn, Eomer Javelin's one leader gets the elephant to push the other over. Eowyn and Mary are riding through. She cuts down the legs of the elephants. In turn, they all seem to go down. Theoden and Eowyn still battle as Mary finds himself caught in the middle, but defending himself. Wow, Eowyn finds himself in a melee with Dr. Claw Orc. Certainly holds her own. The army begins breaching the second level of Minas Tirith. Pippin seems a bit discouraged. Gandalf at least reassures himself of what lies beyond death. Sounds pretty cool. It's definitely tailored to a hobbit. This calms him down. Still, Olafin's trampling. Now enter the Nazgul in battle. The Witch King's Wyvern fucking grabs Theoden in the mouth and throws him. Eowyn fucking cuts the head off the damn Wyvern, by God! Respectfully speaking, Eowyn is so large, just an absolute unit. She faces the Witch King in battle. He has an imposing flail. She gets subdued when his flail breaks her shield. Damn, she should have dodge rolled and punished. Aragorn leads his two allies and the army of the dead into battle against the orcs. Big brass fellowship theme. So, how the hell do incorporeal forms actually affect the orcs? Noice. Merry stabs Witch King in the leg. No man can kill me. Eowyn is no man. Fuck yeah, she stabs him in the void face. Wow, arrogant Gordon came to battle real quickly. Dr. Claw Orc is quick in retreat. Gimli and Aragorn fuck him up. Legolas climbs up the elephant and increases his kill count. Another Wilhelm scream as a harem deer falls. The army of the dead assists him. I guess the final elephant falls. Okay, it isn't the last elephant. At least they're being beaten back. Eowyn limps back towards Theoden. He is about to be Theoden. He speeches in front of her, proud of having died for a great cause. Yep, she sobs on his corpse. The aftermath. Gandalf walks among the dust in the corpse-ridden ground. Aragorn releases the army of the dead from their purgatory despite Gimli feeling them useful. There is much stillness except for the wind rushing. Pippin surveys the dead and finds Merry's robes. Eomer thinks Eowyn dead and shouts his no. Gandalf is undeterred. I think there's a non-diegetic song. Damn, they nurse Eowyn back to health. She wakes up finding a Minas Tirith bread. Here's Faramir. This song is a bit too much lyrically. The scene of the aftermath at night. Pippin is still looking for Merry. He finds him KO'd. They reunite. Now we're at the Tower of Sauron, and Frodo is captured by orcs, likely to be tortured. He wakes up finally. They survey his possessions, including his mithril. Lo, the orcs fighting among themselves. Blah, blah, blah. They're evil, so they're impractical. One of them throws a dropkick down below. Just a perfect Bob Holly-esque dropkick. What the fuck? Literally, a civil war can apparently just break up between these fucks. Here's Sam. He makes his way through a largely empty area. He shines with Sting and grunts them out of the way. He's able to slash his way through the ranks. We pan up outside the tower. Frodo is bounded, mostly naked. He tries to get out, an orc threatens him. But Sam comes to his rescue. Frodo apologizes. Damn, Sam was able to get to the ring before they could. There's a little ring voice dispute, but Frodo manages to take it back. He jizzes a little as it goes around his neck. Oh, nice, they find themselves some endgame orc armor. Onward to Mount Doom. We finally see the Eye of Sauron somewhat up close. Sam urges them to press on. Gandalf is unable to see Frodo at the moment. He warns that despite Sauron's defeat, it may be temporary. Gandalf is a little pessimistic, but Aragorn is more motivated and proposes to march to the Black Gate to draw away Sauron's forces. Gandalf is still not convinced. Aragorn takes up the Palantir and resists, holds the sword of Elendil in front of it. Palantir shows him Arwen dead. This makes him draw back and drop the amulet she gave him. Forgot what it's called. Nevertheless, they march toward the Black Gate. Eowyn, Eomer, and Faramir confront each other. Frodo and Sam, armor-clad, watch as the orcs as they move off. They hide from the coming orc forces. The orcs notice them and whip them into the front lines. Both sets of forces move to confront each other. Bright as fuck on the human side, overcast on the orc side. Lol, the orc inspector just makes a bull-ass stock fully sound. There's a big calamity among the orcs. Amid the rabble, Frodo and Sam are able to escape. They move towards Mount Doom. Frodo and Sam's steps seems to be getting weaker now as they get closer. Frodo falls at the foot of the mountain, feels the weight of the ring. Sam makes them push forward. They drop their armor. He reassures Frodo of a light in the sky. Oh wait, it may be Sauron's surveillance beam. Lol. They have no more water. They're not confident about there being a return journey. The baby face army marches to meet Sauron's forces at the Black Gate. Sam and Frodo continue as Sauron's voice and black speech whispers in Frodo's mind. The light of Sauron's eye hits him and he faints. The heroes wonder where the army at the Black Gate is. The gate opens after Aragorn implores them. Here's a Nazgul on a horse, I think. Big fucking yellow and bloody teeth. All a bunch of teeth. Teeth, 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 teeth. They're Frodo's mithril shirt. More teeth. He sounds like Jemaine as the vampire. Aha! Lol, Oregon. Oregon? Aragorn cuts off his teeth ass head. Okay, now the gate opens and the orcs come through. Aragorn has everyone pull back. Now the light has passed. Frodo and Sam continue. Aragorn gives a speech in front of his men. This day we fight. He's finally king, I guess, as the fellowship music plays. The orcs march forward. Dang, Sauron's army is huge. Frodo and Sam are fucking struggling, but pushing on. The goodies raise their sword. Despite being outnumbered and surrounded, they're like the whole of a donut of space. What about side by side with a friend? Ah, Sam cradles Frodo as they reach another part of the mountain. He reassures Frodo with the Shire and Spring and the taste of strawberries. There's no veil between me and the Wheel of Fire. Sam fucking carries Frodo and moves forward. Sauron calls to Aragorn. He vows to fight Frodo as they charge forward, including Merry and Pippin. Sam has Frodo in a fireman's carry as the fellowship theme is booming with chorus vocals. Damn, it's Gollum fucking with them again. He has Frodo in chokehold. Frodo tries to implore, but Smeagol shows his true colors. The armies fight fiendishly. It's all blurry and shaky. Ringwraiths fly in our wyverns. Sam and Gollum fight. Sam fucking slashes him in the gut and runs after Frodo, who is now running in the volcano. Gandalf now has a sword, and the eagles start flying off the wyverns. Why the fuck eagles? What foreshadowed this? Frodo and Sam beat each other in Mount Doom. Frodo cannot destroy the ring despite Sam imploring him. The voice of Sauron whispers to Frodo, and he's finally possessed. He puts on the ring. Sauron finds him. The wyverns fly towards. Gandalf knows what's up. Gollum rises behind Sam and bashes him with a rock. He holds onto the invisible Frodo. Aragorn faces off with an armor troll. Damn, he bites off Frodo's finger. Fuck. Gollum looks through the ring. It seems that all hope is lost in the battlefield. Gollum dances around with his precious. The troll tramples Aragorn under his foot. Gollum is finally pushed off a cliff after a struggle. He sinks. Sam is finally able to rescue Frodo before he falls down. The ring melts. Sauron's eye fucking screeches. The tower crumbles and falls. The goodies look on in triumph. The Sauron's eye sends an explosion forward. It basically takes out the orc army. Oh wait, it creates a chasm in the earth through which many of them fall, including the Black Gate. The rest of the orc army falls back. Mount Doom collapses. Lol, this makes the hero's words. Sam and Frodo no sell and run past fucking lava. They're seemingly stranded on a rock. Shit is exploding, and rivers of lava flowing around them. Finally, Frodo sees the Shire and has good memories. They both reminisce and are glad to be with each other. It fades to black. And now, we go to the ending. Sam and Frodo are picked up by the eagles, one of which is ridden by Gandalf. He wakes up surrounded by light. Gandalf is there. They laugh. Merry and Pippin join him. Here's Gimli. Here's Legolas. Here's Aragorn. Fellowship theme. And here's Sam. Fade to black. Back to Minas Tirith. The people and soldiers surround the citadel as Aragorn is crowned. Gandalf crowns him. The crowd cheers. Aragorn gives a speech about rebuilding in peace. Aragorn sings in Elvish. Flower petals rain. We cut between a bunch of goodies. Here are the elves to recognize his kingship. Arwen is alive, because of course. Their union, etc. Wow, they kiss. Crowd applauds. Even Elrond approves. Here are the hobbits to bow to them. You bow to no one. Everyone bows to them. Big sweeping version of their hobbit theme, or Shire theme, whatever it is. Lol. Now Frodo begins narrating about the fourth age of Middle-earth as we go around the Tolkien map. 13 months later, they ride to the Shire, finally. They acknowledge the one hobbit who, for some reason, shakes his head. Everyone celebrates with a huge pumpkin and drinks. That one guy looks like Deagle. The hobbits share glances with each other, clink their glasses and drink. Sam finally works up the courage to talk to Rosie. Frodo is finally smiling about something. We cut to Sam and Rosie marrying each other. Pippin catches the bouquet. We fade to Frodo narrating in his house again. He's a writer like Bilbo, of course. A bunch of platitudes. I'm guessing this is Tolkien's actual prose. Of course. It's There and Back Again by Bilbo. Sam enters and Frodo winces at his wound. Oh, okay, yeah, he's finished Lord of the Rings. We cut to the outside of the Shire. More narration from Frodo. He narrates about Bilbo. Here comes Gandalf. Frodo is bringing old man makeup Bilbo to a cemetery of the elves. Bilbo asks for the ring. Frodo claims he lost the ring. They both fall asleep. Cut to Rivendell. Sam and Frodo escort Bilbo. Here's Elrond and some other elves ready to take Bilbo onto the boat. Galadriel announces the Dominion of Men. Bilbo is ready for another adventure. He is led on the boat. The elves join him. Gandalf bids them all farewell. The fellowship has ended. For all tears are in evil. What tears? Wait. 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 Oh my god, I lost it. What tears are an evil? Crocodile tears, maybe. Frodo is going with Gandalf and leaving his book to Sam. Sam is in tears, as are Merry and Pippin. Why the fuck is he leaving Lol? They all embrace each one after the other. Gandalf beckons Frodo. They go on the boat. Frodo looks back and smiles. The boat leaves. Fade to white, and we're back on the Shire. Sam now has a daughter. He also has another baby with Rosie. Samwise fucks. He revels in having returned to the Shire. He closes the yellow door. That's where the end card is. So, one ending, two ending, three ending, four ending, five, six, seven, eight endings.
Spent 3 weeks working on the last 45 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. Truly, I understand that. I guess it's a way of sort of giving people who were who stuck with the movies for through thick and thin, like all the stuff in the Shire, Frodo leaving, Frodo writing, but they could have ended the movie very easily after You Bow to No One.
Yeah, basically. I mean, there was no reason for any of those. It didn't add anything, especially because they removed the scouring of the Shire from the movie, and therefore, when they get back to the Shire, nothing in the Shire has changed. And so you say that everyone's celebrating. It's actually meant to be that basically no one knows what happened. Like, they went on this huge adventure, they were gone for 13 months, they came back, and no one in the Shire gives a shit. Which I feel like is a really weird place to kind of to end the movie back in the Shire where no one even knows what the hobbits did. It's like,
put over that the movie's about family, with Sam finally having the courage to ask a woman out.
And Sam lives life a quarter mile at a time. This movie is about family, but they make such a big deal about being like, this is the last time we'll ever be together again. And it's kind of like, could you not just, like, go visit Aragorn? Or Aragorn can't just come visit the Shire? Like, he's king, so he can pretty much do whatever the fuck he wants, right?
You know what this reminded me of? Before 2020 became, like, a hell world, famed Japanese junior heavyweight pro wrestler Jushin Thunder Liger was finalizing his retirement. I forgot whether this was before Wrestle Kingdom or after Wrestle Kingdom where he had his last matches, but during a press conference, like, he and, like, a bunch of his buddies, including Tiger Mask 4, were there, and Tiger Mask 4 got to, like, pay tribute to him, say things on the mic, and he's like, I gotta say, I'm really gonna miss you. I'm so sad to see you go. And then Jushin Liger goes, like, I'm still here. You could visit me. And that just came to mind. Made me happy.
Yeah, like, why aren't these people who have gone on this adventure able to come together and just, like, fucking, like, have a barbecue or something? Like, it just seemed a bit much. Like, you if you wanted to show that Sam finally married Rosie, whatever her name was, you could have just had her be there, like, looking at Sam while everyone bows to them, and, like, boom, that's your ending. Like,
yeah, you could tell a lot of visual stories in from one cut to another.
Yeah.
And, like, you would accuse the whole, like, celebration scene of perhaps being too long and making too many references, but it's better than just, like, spending another half hour telling us, oh, they're still alive, and they remain to be alive. Even Bilbo is still alive.
Yeah. They're still alive. Oh, look, fade to black, they're still alive. Fade to black. Oh boy, it's been 4 years and they're still alive. Fade to black.
I'm gonna say something maybe a little controversial. I didn't mind the multiple endings.
Okay, explain yourself.
Yeah, because I knew it was coming because everyone had warned me about it, and I think I was expecting much worse.
I was kind of the opposite. I was expecting that everyone was overreacting, and so I was like, oh, well, it's probably like, it's like fade to black three times, it's whatever. And then it's like, oh no, it's still going. It just, oh boy, it's still wow, this is still going. Okay, is this, nope, it's still going. That was my experience, was thinking it wasn't as bad as people said, and then it was kind of worse. Because I very much have that, Obligatory Kevin Smith reference. I very much have the fucking stupid Randall Graves scene from Clerks 2 where he makes the Lord of the Rings fan throw up because he is a homophobe. And like, yeah, when he says like any of the 7,000 endings that followed, I'm like, that's just Randall Graves being a fucking dickhead. And I'm like, oh no, he, that's like, in that whole rant, that was like maybe the one thing he was probably right about, because it certainly goes on. But enough about the endings. I have a question. Do you guys think that Sam is a better protagonist for these movies than Frodo is?
I think he shows more growth than Frodo.
I mean, is that even a fair kind of analogy? Because, like, Frodo is basically spending the entire movie just having his mind drained.
I found like, myself more interested in Sam. And I'm not, again, I'm past the point where I was like, oh, Frodo is a jabroni. He's not. He's a good character who goes through some shit, but I don't think he necessarily changes over the course of the three movies. And that could be as a result of the ring kind of draining his personality and it being such a, it like, being so much of a burden, but it just, it, he didn't come across as having that much of a,
I'm intrigued, of a
character arc.
I'm intrigued by like, we could say that Frodo is an idiot, but I understand, as the movie presents it, or at least as the movie implies, why he's so trusting towards Gollum. There is an empathy there. Like, he sees what the ring has done to him, and he thinks that there is, like, redemption. He thinks that he can, through his empathy, he can sort of lead him on a better path and, like, allow him to sort of assist in destroying the thing that completely ruined him. Turns out he's wrong.
He also understands what the ring did to Gollum, because it's doing functionally the same thing to him.
Yeah, precisely. And as far, but like, you compare him with Sam, who's a very sort of nondescript dude caught eavesdropping, has none of the history or kind of like imposition, like imposingness as the other members of the Fellowship, and yet he comes through. He's able to be brave. He's able to sort of do things that you wouldn't have expected him to be able to do, such as beat back the spider, infiltrate the orc palace and kind of like really pull one on them when they thought that they had the ring. So seeing his moment, like, you get to see much more triumphant moments with him, whereas with Frodo, it's just like one long plot line towards exhalation.
Yeah. He's holding his breath the entire time. And I do think, like, Frodo, he's pretty badass in his showdown with the spider. Like, seeing him actually be cunning and smart and, like, sort of outwitting the spider. Like, I dug those scenes because I was like, good on you, Frodo, for, like, being able to take care of yourself without someone having to run in and save you necessarily. And yeah, I know he eventually got poisoned or whatever, but like, that was cheap heat. Like, the spider was clearly outwitted and he had to hit a low blow to win the match. Like, that was clearly just cheap heat. You know, that spider is just like Cody Rhodes. He doesn't want to put anyone over. But yeah, I just thought it was an interesting question to pose, because you're right in that we get to see more of Sam transforming into something different. And ultimately, I mean, Frodo kind of, by the end, he decides, fuck it, I'm actually gonna put on the ring. So all that work was kind of for nothing, sort of ish. Am I making sense or no?
I mean, kind of, yeah. Like, that is kind of, like, the depressing reality, especially in the book, because as I understand in the book, after Gollum takes the ring, he just falls off the cliff without Frodo doing anything else.
Yeah, and initially, as written in the script, it was actually that Frodo was going to push Gollum off the cliff, and they realized that was going to make Frodo a villain, because he would have just out and out murdered someone, even if it is Gollum. And so instead they had them struggle for the ring and then tumble over the edge, and then that is how Gollum meets his end. But yeah, Frodo's arc is kind of like sad.
It's functional. It's functional. Like, yeah, you see him deteriorate while Sam while Sam rises.
Yeah. Sam rises essentially to be able to, you know, literally and figuratively be able to carry Frodo to complete his mission.
So I really like the action that went on outside Minas Tirith.
And, yeah.
And the overall, I mean, just for the set pieces, not necessarily for it being a payoff to anything like narrative. I don't know who the fuck the Haradrim were.
Yeah, me either.
I know they sort of wore turbans, and one of them looked like Xerxes from 300, so that just doesn't.
Yeah, they just kind of show up out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, they're in the two towers. Like, when Faramir, like, catches Frodo and Sam and Gollum, like, that's who they're looking at. So,
but wait, they're really?
Not. Yeah, remember, because that's the first time we see the Oliphants.
The Oliphants. But, oh, I thought that it was just that Faramir's army of rangers had Oliphants, and so they were sort of different in the two towers. I love how consistently I sound like I'm just like don't understand what's going on.
It's a lot of shit to remember.
Yeah.
So I don't blame you for not necessarily remembering everything that happens. Just how could you? But yeah, we do see them in the first in the two towers. They are established as being part of Sauron's army or whatever. But yeah, they do still kind of show up out of nowhere in this battle. I think to shove another wrestling reference into this podcast, I feel like this is the difference between the Battle of Helm's Deep and the battle, the multiple battles of Return of the King. Is a bit like watching a match that has a really, really interesting story compared to, you know, a match that is a spot fest.
Yeah, so it's essentially like Battle of Helm's Deep is Bret Owen at WrestleMania 10.
Yeah.
The sort of battle outside Minas Tirith is to play, depending on what you consider, maybe a Young Bucks match, I don't know. Sometimes they have good angles behind them. It's unfair to the Young Bucks, but then again, they're everywhere, and they've been everywhere for the past like 11 years. I love them, but they've been everywhere.
I was gonna say it's a bit like that Will Ospreay versus Ricochet match that broke the internet.
Yes, yeah.
Like, it's like, holy shit, this is space age wrestling. And then you watch it like 2 years later, and you're like, this is good, but it's not the same. You know.
And furthermore, both of them are just like
shitheads.
Not really. To put it lightly, thank you for being blunt, because I was going to say, not really the best people. Will Ospreay is fucking awful, and Ricochet just... ugh.
Hangs out with Marty Skrull.
Yeah.
Right, but,
yeah, I mean, that's a good enough comparison, I think.
Yeah.
Eowyn probably has her most defining moments in these scenes, however.
Yeah, she does. including the scenes that aren't in the theatrical cut for some fucking reason.
Wait, what scene is not in the
No, no, just the stuff with her and Faramir is not in the theatrical cut.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah. Everything else is, you know, in Theoden. We have to,
I forgot he was in this movie.
I mean, he's in a lot of the scenes.
Yeah, he is, but he, I feel like he doesn't have much effect on the plot.
No, there's like a fake out where for like a minute or two, he's like, oh, why should we answer the call of Gondor or something like that? But once everything kicks off, then he's like, of course we're going to join the battle. So, you know, he's not much of a character in and of himself, but what I was trying to say was that it's kind of, you have to remember the context that the book was written in, like how important it was for Theoden to be like, Eowyn is going to be, you know, basically the heir to the throne. You know, I think you could be cynical and say that her arc is just the arc of putting a woman in a position of power, but it feels so natural that I think that's kind of unfair, because she is a character that is actually a character, and she's not just badass lady woman who swings a sword, because we gotta have one of those in this movie. We're gonna, spoiler warning, we're gonna have one of those in the next movie. But yeah, Eowyn, I feel like the movie did right by her, I think, even though I think it would have made more sense from a story purpose if Eowyn and Aragorn were together, but I guess I can just search out some fanfic. I'm sure that fanfic exists of that actual eventuality.
Be careful going down that rabbit hole.
Maybe I'll have my wife look at it first, and then she'll vet it for me.
So let's talk about the Mouth of Sauron and how I didn't understand who or what the fuck that was beyond the.
I didn't either, but that's what it said it
really
was online.
Really fucking metal and toothy, like, Jemaine Clement voice-sounding villain thing. Yeah.
You see, all I was thinking of during that scene was, ah, can I get a helmet that isn't stabbing me?
The Mouth of Sauron is not in a theatrical cut. At all.
Oh, he's the...
You didn't miss much. Like, that's one thing I understand why they cut it.
I understand it too, but at the same time, like, I don't regret seeing it, because it's an image that'll be with me for... I think it's... At the same time, it's probably also one of those memes that I'd seen, like, years and years ago, and 4 years and years, kind of like I Am No Man, and it's just like, oh yeah, that's from this.
I mean, I've seen... Like, looking at the picture of him, I've definitely seen this, and I feel like maybe the Mouth of Sauron was in a trailer or something, but it's kind of weird that he's cut from the movie, but then again, I guess he didn't, from what you guys are saying, it's not like he added anything to the movie.
No, he was just a menacing, kind of cornball menacing thing that Aragorn just cuts the head off of.
I mean, that explains why he has such a cool head.
Yeah.
There's so much to talk about.
So much!
Oh, boy.
Let's just call the whole thing off. And then we could just be like, just make fun of The Hobbit on its own merits as like a shit fit few movies. Not to spoil. But yeah. I mean...
Oh, don't remind me. Those
I'm not watching the extended versions, by the way.
I would ask you not to, because I think there's going to be even dumber like, at least this seems like the stuff that was put into the extended edition at least seemed like plot-relevant stuff. It doesn't... I don't get this... I get the sense that the only reason the Hobbit movies have extended editions is because The Lord of the Rings has extended editions, and it was sort of the for expected the, thing.
For the sheer obligatory nature of it. My reasoning is, as much as we've been talking about this, I have no regrets watching any of these movies. I enjoyed watching them. Like, it sort of, it brought to light, and I think the same is true for the book, for you two, like, how I feel about it, and, like, it kind of confirmed my feelings about it. But my reward is not even attempting to see the extended edition of the Hobbit movies.
I think I will also stick with theatrical versions, because I just don't want to watch the extended cuts.
Yeah, I think starting from where I was at Fellowship, where I was like, oh boy, these movies are going to be a fucking chore. The Two Towers and The Return of King really not just aren't just good movies on their own merit, but they're just, they're movies that improved my viewpoint on Fellowship, because now I have context for all the characters, so I can go back and watch Fellowship and probably appreciate that, oh, so this is why, you know, so this is why this happens. And I mentioned before that I thought this trilogy was going to be more Star Wars. It is not more Star Wars. It is its own thing, and I am happy that we watched this particular trilogy, just because these are excellent movies. And though they have their problems, as even the best of movies have their problems, they're still rather good movies, and yeah, just a fun time. If you haven't seen them, you should watch them. I would say you can get away with watching the theatrical cut, unless you guys say different. I don't think you're, from what I'm hearing of the differences, I don't think you're missing that much from the, if you don't, I mean, if you want to watch the extended edition, it's great, but, you know, it's just, there's an extra hour of stuff that isn't necessarily stuff, if that makes sense. All right, so, with Lord of the Rings, the trilogy, the one trilogy that truly does rule them all, since it made the most money, so it wins. We moved to a trilogy that was, I think this trilogy is The Hobbit, from what we've seen, is a trilogy that can be described as much more cynical. Lord of the Rings was clearly a labor of love. I don't get the sense that the Hobbit movies are going to be that. Have you guys seen the Hobbit movies before?
I have seen the second two in theaters. I have not seen the first one.
Why?
I don't know. I think I got dragged to them. And I remember thinking the second one was okay, but the third one was just,
What about you, Chris?
I have not seen a single minute of that, because I was definitely in the mood of, like, post... I've seen pieces of these movies before, and it's like, I don't want to deal with this.
I feel like that's a good name for these episodes we've been doing. Lord of the...
Lord of the... Jesus Christ, is this movie still going on? I gotta go to bed. I got fucking homework. This movie just won't fucking end. That's... that's what these movies should be called. Lord of the Rings. Fuck, I had shit to do today. I'm not gonna be able to do any of it. And on that bombshell, yeah, our next, what even is the fucking name of the fucking next one of these? I'm not even going to pretend that I'm looking to watching
The Hobbit Part 1. We'll see you next time.
Journey.
The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey. We're going on an adventure. We're going on an adventure. We're going on an adventure. Until next time, I'm Casey.
I'm your Fox Spin Backlash.
The Equalizer's Mastodon out of the Monaco.
I'll see you next time on the next episode of Sequelize It, or whatever the fuck the show is called. Bye.
Bye-bye.